From NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boat Works, Champaign; Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur; and Bodywork Associates in Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. In just a moment, we're going to talk about taxes. Two tax experts are with me in the studio this afternoon to take your telephone calls this afternoon. If you've got questions about your Illinois or federal tax return, today's the day to call in and get those questions answered. In a moment, we'll be talking with Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein. First, though, we're going to talk with Jay Pierce and Maeve Riley. Jay is our station manager here at WILL Radio, and Maeve O'Reilly is the editor of our program guide, Patterns. We've got to take care of a little business here before we get to the real business of the Afternoon Magazine, which is live conversations on all kinds of topics.
Well, and it's the business that we'll take care of in the next few minutes that lets us provide the service like today's program will be. When you call 217-244-9455 and you make your contribution to WILL Radio, it helps us to afford to be the radio station you expect us to when you turn us on. And one of the things you expect from us on a regular basis on the Afternoon Magazine is these programs we call our service programs. And that's where we provide some real basic necessary information to you. We give you access to people you might not otherwise have access to. And today we're going to help you do your taxes. Now, I know if you're like me, it may be somewhat intimidating to pick up a phone, go through the yellow pages, and dial somebody and say, can I have a meeting with you about my taxes? Maybe it's easier to do it a little more anonymously by calling in on the radio show today. You don't have to be afraid. We're not going to charge you a fee when you call into the program. This is an absolute free consultation with a CPA today. So if you're getting ready to do your taxes, you have some questions on any aspect of it, fire away. But you have to know that we have to pay the electric bill, we have to pay Celeste's salary, we have to pay Henry Frayne's salary in there, we have to pay all of the costs for operating a radio station, which come up to about $93 an hour for us. And you're helping to subsidize that when you call 244-9455. Maeve Riley is in Pledge Central where the phones will ring. And Maeve, you know, if we get a good landslide of phone calls today in appreciation of this service, we'll be able to continue this and even make it better in the future.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking about your taxes, and think of all the things your taxes support. They support the roads, the schools, the, you know, your neighborhood, your community. And think about taking a minute just to make a pledge to support part of your community, WILL Radio. This is really an important part of your community. It's a service that we know you value and treasure. And what would your life be like without it? Just think about that for a minute. Give us a call, 217-244-9455. We've got a couple of great volunteers sitting by, and we'd love to get the phones ringing because I'd love to see them jumping around, answering lots of different phones. But now's the time. It's not very busy right now. Give us a call, 217-244-9455. Make a $75 pledge and do your part in supporting public broadcasting.
Now, what's our dollar total so far?
Right now, we're at $46,301.
On our way to $115,000 by the time it's over Saturday night. So, you can see.
We got a ways to go.
We got a ways to go, but we'll do it.
Yep.
We always know the last 3 days are the big ones at 244-9455. A quick note about taxes, as long as we're talking about it, and then we'll get into the meat of the program.
Okay.
But tax support for WILL has been eroding. We are not fully tax supported, as many people think we are. In fact, in the last 3 years, our tax-based support has gone down by $330,000. That's our federal, state, and university support, and we have to make up for that somehow. Fortunately, you have come through and made up about half of that. We need to make up the other half and go beyond it. 217-244-9455, and all it takes is a minute and a $40 contribution on your part.
This This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Two tax experts are with us today. Our guests are Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein of RSM McGladrey Incorporated. If you have questions about your Illinois or federal tax return, they can help. Marty Verdick is CPA and Managing Director of Tax Services for RSM McGladrey, Inc. in Champaign. Steve Winterstein is a CPA and manager with RSM McGladrey's tax department. Marty has joined me on the program once or twice a year now with one of his colleagues for many, many, many years, going back to the days when WILL Radio was in Gregory Hall. And over the years, he's answered a lot of tax questions on this program, and he and Steve are ready to take some more today. So if you'd like to talk with these two fine fellows, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call for you, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having us.
So what kind of changes? Are there some changes that we need to be aware of for filing our 2004 tax returns?
Well, one thing is certain in the tax laws, there's always change.
Always change.
Always
okay.
change. The most recent tax legislation was signed in October by the president. It made a lot of changes in the business area, not as many changes to individual taxation, but it's always in a state of change. Things are happening all the time.
Okay. We'll talk some more about the specifics maybe as we go along, but let's talk with the listener now who's waiting for us in Savoy on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was calling because I had a tax question. Our family was blessed to bring two young girls into our family through international adoption this past year. And there appeared to be some discrepancy on whether we can claim them as a dependent, even though they were only here part of the year. It seems like some of the tax law states that for domestically born children, if they're even in your family for part of the year, you can claim them as a full year dependent. But something about a foreign-born child, they have to be here for the full year.
Well, certainly the first part of your statement is true. In the case of a biological child, they don't have to be with you for the entire year, but rather if they are born on or before December 31st, you do get the dependency exemption for them for the entire year. In the case of an adoption, I don't recall, and Steve is quickly looking in the book here to see if he can find anything on that. I don't recall the specific rule on that, and that's something we'll try and look up for you here. One thing I did want to point out, there is a credit available that you should be aware of for certain qualified adoption expenses, and do be sure to take advantage of that federal tax credit on your tax return. Steve, anything here?
Well, my initial assessment is that you would be able to take a full exemption for adopted child. From what I'm reading so far, I think I wouldn't mind a little more time, but it looks to me as if you could take the full adoption, consider that a full exemption. I didn't think there would be a difference between an adoption and
And that would be true, I think, Steve, as long as the adoption was finalized during the 2004 tax year. I think if the adoption was not finalized before the year, but rather the child was residing with you as a foster child, I think you may very well get to a different answer.
Yes.
So I think if the adoption is finalized, and this is one that both Steve and I are fairly comfortable with, but I think we'd want to take a little bit more time to verify the answer to that. I'm not aware of any unique rule with respect to a foreign-born adopted child versus a U.S.-born adopted child. But again, that's a question I have not had come up before, so I haven't looked it up.
Yes, what I've seen so far here is that an adopted child is considered a child as if it were a child by blood for this purpose, and so you would be able to receive the full dependency exemption.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Great.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Yeah, I got a bit of happy news last July, first time in my life. The IRS sent me a check in the mail, believe it or not, for about $670. I was happy to get it. the accompanying papers, which are hard to decipher, said you made a mistake on Schedule D for capital gains, Part 4.
Mm-hmm.
But who's complaining?
Well, as long as they don't come back later and ask for the money back, I would agree with you.
Yeah, sure. Here is my question. In April, to the best of my ability, and at the cost of a heck of a lot of time, I struggled with Schedule D, Part 4, in pencil. I worked through that whole confounded mess, came up with the best numbers that I can. Then I typed it up, when I typed it up clean and sent it in on April 15th, I only typed the top and the bottom line of Schedule 4, because after all my work, I discovered that the top line and the bottom line were the same. So I didn't retype all the intermediate lines, match line so-and-so and line so-and-so and choose the lesser, match line so-and-so, blah, 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 you know the routine. I just typed the bottom and the top line.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously my calculations, which I did very conscientiously, were wrong according to the IRS computer. And so they sent me my check in July.
Mm-hmm.
I propose to do the following this coming April 15th. When I get to the back of Schedule D and I get down to Part 4, I propose to fill in just the top line and the bottom line in my rough draft and send it in that way and to pay whatever my numbers come up with. And once again, if the IRS is generous, heck, I'll be glad to receive a check in July. I presume there's nothing wrong with that, or unless you know that the IRS has a new policy that they will never, never refund a mistake where the taxpayer charged himself too much and gave a break to the IRS.
Well, it is IRS policy to verify tax calculations. And if there is a refund, they will send it to you. Certainly, if there is a balance due, they'll notify you and send you a bill.
You bet.
The calculation that you're referring to in Schedule D last year was particularly confusing because of the implementation of a lower rate of tax on certain capital gains after a particular date in May. And so page 2 of the Schedule D was a challenge last year.
You're telling me.
And, I had a number of people who prepare their own returns frantically call me as it came down to April 15th and say, gee, how do I do this? And I said, gee, I let the software do it. I use the computer. I don't try and do that by hand. This year, you'll be happy to know that when you go to Schedule D, the calculation on page 2 is considerably easier because you don't have this issue of having to split the gains into prior to the rate reduction and after the rate reduction. So I think you'll find it's a little more user-friendly this year.
I assume you could not fault my proposed strategy of just fill in the top and the bottom line of Part 4 and rely on the generosity and the goodness of the IRS computer to fire off a refund to me if that doesn't work and save myself an hour or so of grief fiddling with Part 4 line by line.
At least an hour. And,
remember
that you are signing the tax return under penalties of perjury that it is a complete and accurate tax return, but I don't think the IRS is going to get terribly excited if you have a computational error that results in a balance due or a refund to you. They'll do as they did last year and send you the refund, or if you happen to go the other direction, they'll send you a bill.
Fine. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 1. Hello.
Yes, thank you. In 2004, I bought some equipment and materials, basically a computer and a professional-grade printer and a bunch of paper and ink and to create artwork that I expect to start selling. Now, do I have to file on the 2004 taxes the expenses to be able to defray those in the future? Or, am I going to lose the ability to do that if I don't, declare those costs in this year's taxes?
Well, will you be starting your business? Will you be holding yourself out to provide that service in 2004? Did you do that, or will that start in 2005?
Well, that's sort of a gray area. I guess I expect to start making some money in 2005 and did not in 2004. So, I mean, I've been telling people that I'm doing this, but I haven't, you know, I'm going to be having a show in 2005, didn't have that in 2004. I guess if you mean by that, I didn't, you know, put myself out as a business in 2004.
But you were using this equipment in the business activity in 2004, even though you didn't have any revenue yet.
I've been creating and printing the work and
doing
that.
Well, you're exactly right in asking the question. Typically, when you're in the startup phase of a business, but you're not generating revenue and you are not holding yourself out in business. In other words, you're not proposing any services, or you didn't in 2004, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the hard costs, the computer and the printer and the like, typically you would capitalize those. In other words, you would show those on your books and records as equipment as part of the company, but you wouldn't start depreciating that. And I don't know if you understand the concept of depreciation, but writing off equipment over a period of time. But you wouldn't start taking a deduction for that until you start holding yourself out in business, and that would be 2005.
Okay.
If there can be situations where even though if there's this period of time that you need to use the equipment to get ready to get to the point where you can hold yourself out, then I think the argument would be made that you could begin depreciating it in 2004. It's really a question of, is the equipment being used in a trader business, even if you haven't received revenue yet, or are you merely gathering the components, if you will, that you will need to begin holding yourself out in that trader business? But normally, if we talk about supplies and consumables like paper and ink and those kinds of things, as a cash basis taxpayer, those normally are going to be deducted in the year that you pay for them, that you purchase and pay for them. Even if you used a credit card to do that, you would still get that deduction. So I would think at the very least you would probably have are you a sole proprietor? You didn't create Okay. I would think at the very least you would have a Schedule C that you would file, and you would report your expenses. And as far as the depreciation on the equipment, I would certainly list those items on the depreciation schedule. Whether or not you actually begin depreciating them depends upon whether or not you're actually using that equipment before the end of the year.
Well, I guess the thing I'm wondering about, because, see, a lot of the things, for instance, the paper, which is fairly expensive rag paper, would carry over and use. Some of it got used in 2004. You know, other parts of it will get used in 2005. I guess what I'm asking is, if I don't file for this business for 2004, would I still be able to put that stuff on next year's when I, you know, 2005, when I expect at least to have some income, maybe not enough to pay for all that stuff?
Well, the IRS is fairly specific that as a cash basis taxpayer, if we're talking about ordinary expenses, you claim the deduction in the year that you pay for that item.
Okay.
In the case of inventory, something that let's say that you were buying product for resale.
This is value added. I guess.
Yeah. I understand your particular situation, but I'll make an example of inventory, where I'm buying 100 widgets that I'm going to turn around and sell at a profit. I could not. The IRS would not let me expense the entire cost of 100 widgets in the year that I paid for them. In that case, what I would have to do is recover that cost as I sold them. Now, in your particular case, because what you are doing is what you are buying is in the form of a consumable like paper and ink, that would be an expense in the year that you paid for it, that you purchased and paid for it. And I believe the danger, if you didn't choose to take it in 2004 but rather took it in 2005, is if the IRS were to audit you later, they could look at your 2005 return and say, well, that expense really isn't a 2005 expense. It needs to go back on 2004. And if you're the victim of bad timing and the statute of limitations has run, you could lose the opportunity to deduct that at all. So I would if I were with the facts that I know, I would certainly file a Schedule C, and those items which are consumable in nature, I would go ahead and take those deductions in 04.
Okay, now I'm deducting them against zero profit.
It'll create, we understand.
Yeah, you'll create a loss.
So then I take that loss in the future year?
No, it would appear, if you're sole proprietor, that loss would appear on your 2004 tax return and simply offset other sources of income that you have, such as wages or investment income.
Okay, but it wouldn't carry over to the next year?
No, not unless it exceeded those other sources of income, in which case you could have a loss carryover.
Are you going to have a wage in 2004?
Yeah, from other business.
Yeah, okay. So your loss will show on Schedule C, and it'll carry forward to page one of the return, and it will simply offset some of your wage income.
Oh, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay,
you're welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. If you've got tax questions, today's the day to talk with our tax experts who are with us here on the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests are Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein of RSM McGladrey Incorporated in Champaign. You can join us this afternoon with your questions by giving us a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. We've got a couple of calls coming in, but so as soon as we get those lined up, we will go and talk with our listeners. But first, I want to ask you, I do believe that for many of us, perhaps the one change in the tax law that will affect us is there's been some tweaking of the charity deduction. What's the latest on it?
Well, the most talked about change, I suppose, in the charitable contribution deduction is in the area of donation of vehicles. And I'm not sure if that's your question. I thought it might be, because that's the big change. Prior to 2005, when an individual donated a vehicle, and if you listen to a lot of radio stations, especially I hear it in Chicago stations, lots of charities advertise, donate your vehicle to us and claim the fair market value of the tax deduction. And what the Internal Revenue Code allowed was a deduction equal to the fair market value of that vehicle, without regard to what the charity subsequently sold the vehicle for. And what was happening is that people would go to the Kelley Blue Book website or the Edmunds.com website, and they would select the highest possible value that they could get. So they would use retail value in excellent condition, and let's say assign a value of $3,000 to this old car, when in fact the charity might only get $250 for it when they sell it at auction. And so the Congress perceived that as an abuse, and I would probably agree with them. So as of January 1st, a law that has changed is that now the taxpayer is only entitled to a deduction in an amount equal to what the charity actually realizes on the sale of the car. So you donate the vehicle to a charity, the charity sells it, they're required to notify you as the donor what they got for it. And if they got $250, that's all you can deduct on your tax return. There was a lot of gamesmanship going on with respect to selecting values that were being used for this.
Yeah, and a lot of those cars, it's my understanding, essentially they're bought up by people who cut them up and then fix up the parts. And
a lot of them were bought by auto salvage yards, right, where they're literally giving scrap value for this car. And I mean, there are situations where the car literally wouldn't run; it would be towed away. But people would look it up in Kelley Blue Book and get, you know, they'd find something that says, oh, it's worth $3,000, when in fact it's you'd almost have to pay to have somebody haul it away.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener in Indiana on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Why, on line 20, you report Social Security benefits?
Yes.
Why is it so complicated to figure this out, this table? And why couldn't it be reduced to a tax, you know, table like the one for total interest?
Well, the reason it's complicated is that the taxation of Social Security benefits is based upon your level of income. And anywhere between 0 and 85% of your Social Security benefits may be taxable to you, depending upon your level of income other than your Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to why couldn't it be simpler, that's a matter of tax policy, and only Congress can answer that question. But the way that the reason it is complicated is because the theory behind this was that lower income taxpayers should not have to pay tax on their Social Security benefits. But as people had more and more income and were still eligible to receive Social Security benefits, Congress felt it was appropriate to tax those benefits. And as much as 85% of your Social Security benefit may be subject to tax. I would agree with you. It is a confusing calculation, but it's a necessary evil given the tax law that we have.
But I mean, it would be a sliding scale, no doubt. But I mean, they could do it dollar by dollar, couldn't they?
The calculation of the base income used in this is not as straightforward as that. There are some things that some adjustments that have to be made to it that I think would make it difficult to have a one size fits all table.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm getting toward the age when I could begin taking money out of my IRA, and I'm curious about how that money is reported. I've had T-bills, gains and losses, interest, dividends reinvested, and I don't know what kind of records I should have been keeping and how that money is treated by the IRS.
Okay. And you said this was an IRA account?
Yeah.
Okay.
I received only financial statements, no 1099s or anything over the years.
Sure, and you wouldn't. What happens is that all of the investment income inside the IRA simply accumulates on a tax-deferred basis inside the IRA, so you don't pay tax on that as it grows. When you take that money out of the IRA and you're entitled to begin taking benefits without penalty generally anytime after age 59 and a half,
mm-hmm.
and you have until basically April 1st of the year following the year that you turn 70 and a half to begin taking it out. You have to do it by then. But when you take money out of an IRA, assuming that it was a fully deductible IRA when you funded it,
mm-hmm.
then every dollar that you take out will be taxed to you as ordinary income, and it will be reported on line 15A and 15B on your tax return. So the fact that some of the money that you are taking out of your IRA grew as a result of capital gains or dividend reinvestment or U.S. Treasury obligations, it loses that unique character. And it all comes out to you as just straight, ordinary income.
Okay.
Now, one thing to watch out for on your Illinois return, the state of Illinois, as well as a lot of other states, the state of Illinois does not tax retirement benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing to watch out for on that Illinois return is that you need to remember to make an adjustment. And there was a particular line item or line for that adjustment on your Illinois return where you subtract that back out from your federal adjusted gross income to arrive at your Illinois taxable income.
Okay, good. Can I ask a completely different question?
Sure.
Is it legal for insurance companies to require that you sign up for Medicaid or Medicare?
That's a question that I'm certainly not qualified to answer. Steve, you want to take a pass
no,
at
I've,
it? Okay.
That's another
I'm
show.
Sure
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry we can't help with that
yeah.
one.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana, line two. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'm going to be helping file taxes for a woman who is in a nursing home. She has a pension income, but that's not sufficient to pay the nursing home bills, so she's also on Medicaid. And I'm wondering how to determine what portion of her income is for medical expenses and what portion is for housing.
Well, almost all nursing homes that I'm aware of will actually provide that calculation for you.
I see.
And I think the question is, what portion of the nursing home costs are deductible as medical expenses?
Yes.
As an itemized deduction. Everyone that I've known, every nursing home I've ever encountered, will have someone there who will calculate that for you and do the breakout of the income that they've received that would be deductible as a medical expense.
And is there a complication because part of the payment is being done through Medicaid?
Well, they might consider it a complication in terms of their calculation, but there shouldn't be for you, no. They should still easily be able to come up with that computation for you.
Thank you very much.
With respect to the portion that's deductible on this return, it's only going to be that portion actually paid for by the taxpayer. If it's paid for by Medicaid, then the taxpayer doesn't get to claim that
precisely
piece
right.
as a deduction.
And so the nursing homes will factor that out.
Right.
And they'll take that portion that you have paid and figure for you what portion is deductible. And, of course, as medical expenses, as an itemized deduction, it must exceed a certain percentage of income. But as I've seen before, and most nursing home costs are pretty high, you should be able to get some benefit as an itemized deduction.
Yeah, and I would imagine that that caller might want to make that request pretty soon, right?
Sooner rather than later.
Yeah, because they're probably really busy with a lot of.
Yeah, a lot of times actually they have this. They have kind of a standard formula they apply depending upon the level of skilled care that you have.
Right.
You know, they'll just say, okay, 82% of the total cost is for medically required costs, and the other 18% are.
General
housekeeping kinds of things. So it's not the calculations that I've seen, and I think, Steve, you probably would agree with this, the calculations are not generally unique to a particular taxpayer, but rather a level of care.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. We're talking about taxes this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Two tax experts are with me in the studio, Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein of RSM McGladrey Incorporated in Champaign. If you've got questions about your Illinois or federal tax return, they can help. Phone lines are open and no one's waiting at the moment. We've got maybe about another 15 minutes here left in this portion of the program. The number to call if you'd like to talk with Steve and Marty in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, at this point in the year, is there anything we can do to reduce our tax liability for 2004?
There are still a few things that can be done that will provide some tax benefit for last year. And it primarily relates to the ability to fund retirement contributions really up through the due date of the tax return and still have them as a deductible item on last year's tax return. At this point, that's among the only things that you can really do now that we're in February of 2005 that would have an impact. One of the things that was a little bit unique, unfortunately, it ended on January 31st, and that was a unique provision in the law that was passed by Congress to allow for tsunami relief contributions to be deductible on the 2004 tax return, even though they weren't made until 2005. That was a pretty unusual occurrence.
Yeah. Well, the tsunami hit late, very late in the calendar year 2004. Mm-hmm. So that's off the table now. What about for next year, Steve, in terms of maybe people are thinking about what can I do for next year to try and, you know, reduce the tax bill?
Well, and Marty's exactly right. There are a limited number of things you can do now for 2004. For 2005, of course, you'll think about those very same things, contributions to retirement plans. If you're self-employed, you might have a KEO plan or what's called a SEP plan, and you'll want to start funding those. There's no reason why at least you couldn't fund a portion, if not all of it, at this time and have the earnings throughout the year grow at a tax-free rate. As far as income and deductions are concerned, it's the typical tax planning that you'll involve yourself with. Deductions, especially for businesses, there's still a provision for immediate write-off of equipment for small businesses to the extent you have income. A write-off of up to over $100,000. So businesses are still going to find, small businesses especially, going to find themselves in a position to reduce their taxes. If they were otherwise planning to make a purchase, they'll want to make it before year end and claim the immediate write-off of that equipment.
One of the things that I encourage people to do that are charitable-minded, and it's appropriate given the campaign that you've got going on right now, is a more efficient way of making that charitable contribution, if a person has this opportunity, is rather than using cash or check or credit card, if they have appreciated assets such as stock, it is a great tool to use in making your charitable contributions. And the reason for that is, let's say that you have a stock that you paid $100 for 20 years ago, and today it's worth $1,000. And you were considering making a $1,000 donation to the charity of your choice. Rather than writing a check for $1,000, you could donate that stock, get the same tax deduction for the full $1,000, but not have to recognize the $900 of gain that you would have recognized had you sold the stock. So it you get to the same spot from a deduction perspective, but you've now eliminated $900 of gain in my example. So I encourage clients who are particularly charitably inclined to use appreciated assets. Now, you know, if somebody's making small donations, $50 here, $100 there, that's not particularly efficient. But where people are making sizable donations to, you know, one or more charities, whether it be, you know, the university or a church or whatever organization they would like to support, use of appreciated assets such as stocks and bonds, it's a very efficient way of making that contribution.
Okay, let's talk with some more listeners. Next, we're going to go to a listener on line one calling us this afternoon from Columbus, Ohio. Good afternoon.
Yes, I have a question. They're starting to, they have us adding our state tax to our the amount of money we made for the year, our salary, and they're deducting that. Now, how? Why are they taking something away that they gave you? If I got $600 back on my state tax, they want to add that to my what I made for the whole year, well, and then they want to reach and just tax that money that I got off my state tax.
I'm not sure of your question, so I'm going to ask a question in reply to make sure I have it right. Are you talking about on your wage statement where they've withheld state tax, or are you talking about where you get a state tax refund?
When I get the state tax refund,
okay.
They want me to take that in there and have that deducted.
Yes, okay. All right. I just wanted to clarify the question. The state tax refund is taxable to you if – did you itemize deductions last year?
Yes, I itemized.
Okay. The reason the state tax refund is deductible is last year when you itemized deductions – so, for example, in the 2003 tax year, you itemized deductions. One of the deductions that you claimed was for state taxes paid. So let's use an example and assume that you had $1,000 of state income tax withheld on your W-2 form. You claim that on your itemized deduction schedule as a state tax expense. Now, let's assume that in 2004, you received a refund of $100, that the withholding that you had taken out was a little too much. You got $100 back. Well, because you got to deduct the $1,000 when it was paid, now that you get $100 of it back from the state government, you have to report that on your federal return as income, because you got the benefit for the full $1,000 last year, so now when you get part of that money back, it does represent taxable income. The answer would be different if you did not itemize deductions on your tax return, because then if you didn't get a tax benefit in the prior year, it's not taxable to you this year when you receive it.
Okay, and I have one more question. They're starting to have it where the money that you pay for your insurance, your medical insurance or your dental, can you speak on now they want to start having you, you'll be able to deduct that now?
Again, I'm not sure I understand the question completely, but are you asking about the deduction for medical and dental insurance at your job where you're working?
Right.
Okay. You probably have what is known as a cafeteria plan or a Section 125 plan, which allows you to pay your health insurance and dental insurance with pre-tax dollars. In other words, they basically take it out of your pay and it's not subject to income tax. And that's by far the preferred way of paying it if that's an option for you.
So the tax lady has said at H&R Block, she said that if my medical insurance is $100 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then he added up $100 a week that I paid. They said there's some type of new plan they have out now since the medical benefits are so high that you can deduct the money that you paid into it, your monthly payment to pay for insurance.
Yeah, there's something called a medical savings account or I believe it's a medical savings account. There is a new type of savings plan out there that you can use for medical expenses, and I just haven't. That's something I have not looked at yet much.
Okay, we're gonna leave it there. I hope the caller won't mind, and let's see if we can squeeze another call or two in here before we're out of time. We're gonna go next to a listener on line four in Danville. Hi.
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 I participate in a deferred compensation plan. And on the program I was using, there was an area for payments made to a regular IRA, I didn't claim this deferred compensation or put anything about that on there because I didn't have a 1099 or anything from that. Should I have claimed my monthly payments? Is this considered a regular IRA or is this something different?
Are you talking about payments that you're making into the deferred comp plan or payments that you are receiving from the deferred comp plan?
Payments to it. I'm not receiving anything from it.
All right. Payments to a deferred comp plan simply reduce the gross wages and the taxable wages that appear on your W-2 form. So the W-2 form that you receive from your employer will already reflect this reduction of earnings. So if you defer $5,000 in a deferred comp plan, your W-2 form, gross wages box one, will be $5,000 less than it would have been otherwise. So there's no need to take an additional – not only is there no need, it wouldn't be appropriate for you to take an additional deduction on your tax return.
Well, that's what it kept questioning me. But later on, there was a space – it said, do you participate in a regular IRA?
Mm-hmm.
And when if I filled that out and put the amount in that I have paid in, it gave me like $300 more return.
Well, but you're not participating in an IRA. You're participating in a deferred compensation program, and that's already reflected on your W-2 form.
That's what I needed to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. We're going to have to wrap it up here this afternoon. Before April 15th, would you two come back?
Certainly.
Be happy to.
Okay.
Love to.
Very good. So, listeners, these two will be back. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, helping out our listeners. And as always, it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's always fun.
Our guests this afternoon have been Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein of RSM McGladrey Incorporated in Champaign. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jay Pierce is back with me in the studio. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Celeste.
Did you learn something new?
I learned a lot, and I always learn a lot when I listen to programs like this, and I hope that everyone who has learned something, if you got some information this afternoon that caused you to perk up your ears and say, you know, I didn't know that, I'm glad I do now, that if you can, you'll call 217-244-9455 and help support this kind of a program. It's not something you can really take for granted. It's something that does need to be taken care of and paid for with your contributions, 244-9455. And, you know, Maeve Riley's out in Pledge Central. Why don't we go out there and see what the phone activity is like out there?
Well, we'd like to get these phones ringing, Jay, at 217-244-9455. You know, we were just listening to that show about taxes, and your pledge is tax deductible, so that's another reason to give at 217-244-9455 at the basic membership level. Of $40, you'll become a friend of WILL and get Patterns, our monthly programming guide.
We have a lot of different ways that we get out to you, and we had a call, somebody called from Columbus, Ohio, I understand, Celeste,
yeah,
on the show,
right.
Listening online. And that's another aspect of what we're doing, you know, because you can go back now, if you missed something during this last hour, you can go online to WILL.UIUC.edu and listen to the show again. You can download it as an MP3 and listen to it anytime you want. You can put it in your iPod and listen to it while you're driving around. You know, we are trying to build a service that is as user-friendly and valuable as possible, and we do it with your contributions. That's the only way we can do it, at 244-9455. So, Maeve, $75 right now will get you a stainless steel coffee mug and
The member card. Yes, and that entitles you to two-for-one dining at a lot of area dining establishments, some free entry into some museums, and there's a whole list that you'll get along with it. And when you're traveling throughout the U.S., you can call them and request the list for where you'll be going. So that adds to your travel and saves you a little bit of money and helps us out, too, by making a pledge at $75, 217-244-9455.
Please show us that you value the guest and discussion, the advice that you get here every day on the Afternoon Magazine on Focus 580. This week on the Afternoon Magazine, we've been really heavy on the advice-type shows. We had the nutritionist, Susan Kundrat. We had a feline behaviorist on to help us out with problems we may be having with our furry friend, the cat.
And that was a very popular one. I've heard a lot of talk outside the station about that program.
Yeah, okay. Well, And she is such a great guest, Pam Johnson
Bennett. Why Your Cats Drive You Bats. That's what I subtitled it.
Cat versus cat, keeping peace when you have more than one cat. Yeah. Then yesterday, of course, we talked with Rick Steves, big friend of public broadcasting, television and radio. And today, the tax experts.
Yeah. And we'll have the tax experts
back.
They'll be back. They just agreed to. That's
now,
fantastic.
Yeah. Now, if you had to go out and pay that out of pocket,
oh,
you had to make an appointment and sit down with somebody like that.
Absolutely. And again, you know, you can listen to the show again. You can go to our website and listen to it again. If you missed something that was said, bang, you're right there, and we'll have them back on the air, too. That is a service. That is the epitome of what we try to offer here at WILL Radio. But you have to know, we are not fully government-funded. And a lot of people find that rather surprising. About half of the money that we have to do what we do does come from tax-based sources, the federal, state, and university sources. But the other half needs to come from you, our listeners, at 217-244-9455. So make a fiscally sound investment, a financially responsible move, and call in your support right now. If you're not currently a friend especially, make that $40 contribution. Just make the step. That's what's important.
244-WILL. Thanks to everyone who has joined us this week, joined the members of the Friends of WILL. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, and now we make way for Todd Gleason, who has settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade. Todd?
Hey, it was an up day at the Board of Trade today. Celeste, I think Jay Pierce may have ordered that this morning to see if we could ramp up the phones a little bit later during the closing market report as we pitch to those folks that listen to the ag programming here at WILL for their financial support. But let's go right into the finances at the Board of Trade like we usually do at this hour. In the wheat pit, settlement prices are across, and they came in like this for the March contract. The high today of $2.97, the low at $2.89. Settlement price up 6.25 today, $2.96.25. The Bay futures, $3.05, the high, the low at $2.97. Settled at 304.5, up 5.5 in July, 310.75. The high, the low at 303.5, a settlement price 309.75. They're up 5.25. And the September contract, 315.5, the high, the low at 310.5, a settlement price at 315.25, up 5.25. And December wheat for the day, 324.5, the high, the low at $3.19, settled 323.5. They were up 4.75 for the day. From the corn pit now, the March contract, $1.99.75, the high, the low at 196.5, a settlement price at 198.25, up 3.25 on the day. May futures, 207.5, the high, the low at 204, settlement price up 3 cents at 206. And July corn, 213.75, the high, the low at 211, settled 212.5, up 2.75. September futures, 221, the high, the low at 218.75, settlement price there at 220.5, up 2.75. December futures for the day, 231, the high, the low at 228.5, a settlement price 230.25, up 3. And the March, 238.25, the high, the low at 236.25, settled at $2.37.75, since they were up 3 for the day. The March oats for the day, 163.5, the high, the low at $1.61.75. Settled $1.63.25, up 1.75, and May futures were unchanged at 157.5. That was their low for the day as well. Their settlement price in the May oats at $1.58, and their high price for the day at $1.58.5. The settlement was a penny lower than that at 157.5, unchanged. From the soy complex now, nearby March beans, 519.5, the high, the low 513, settlement price at 516. First notice day, by the way, was yesterday, up 5.25. The Gulf basis, about 66 cents on this day, and that's just about like it was last week. Fairly strong, but not nearly as strong as it was a few weeks ago when it was up to nearly a dollar over the March contract. May futures at 517, high today in the bean pit, low at 512.25, settlement price at 515.25. They were up 4, and the July, 519.75, high, low at 516, settlement price at 518, up 4.5 cents. The August futures at 522.5, high, low at 519, settled 520.75, up 5.25. September contract at 524.5, high, low at 522, settlement price at 522. They were up a nickel for the day. And the November beans, 532, the high, the low at 526, settlement price there at 530.5, up 6.25. January for next year, 2006, 537, the high, the low at 35, a settlement price pretty darn close to the high, 536, and they finished the day 7 cents higher, by the way, during the closing market report today. We'll talk with the good folks at AgriVisor about what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, and it seems to me you might be reaching for your cell phone just about now, so I'll give you that number, 217-244-9455, if you want to get in early at this hour on a Thursday to call in with your pledge of financial support. Go ahead and do that. That's 244-9455. Big Will. March bean meal at the Board of Trade, 150-650. The high, the low at 153.80. The settlement price at 155.20. They were up 190. And the May meal, 155. The high, the low at 153. Settlement price at 154.20, up 180. March bean oil for the day, 19.35. The high, the low at 19.17. Settlement price for the March bean oil, $19.19, up 4 cents. And the May soybean oil, 19.48. The high, low at 19.35. A settlement price at 19.36. And they were up a nickel for the day. Now here with the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is Celeste Quinn. Good afternoon to you, Celeste.
Thank you, Todd. Good afternoon to you as well. Well, prices were lower today on the Mercantile Exchange. March feeder cattle, $100.95 the high, $99.50 the low, the settlement $99.60, that down $132.50. April, $99.90 the high, $98.95 the low, $99.20 the settlement, that down $85. May, $99.10 the high, $97.90 the low, finishing at $97.97.5 down $92.5. February live cattle, $91.67.5 the high, $89.65 the low, $89.75 the settlement, that down $192.5. April, $88.15 the high, $86.65 the low, the settlement $86.72.5, that down $140. February lean hog, $68.10 the high, $67 even the low, $67.02.5 the settlement, that down $130. April, $71.77.5 the high, April, $73.70 the high, the low, $71.77.5. That also, the settlement down the limit, down $2. May and June also down the limit today. May, $75.35 the high, $73.35 the low, and settlement down $2. June lean hog, $77.60 the high, the low, and settlement $75.82.5, that down the limit. February bellies, $88.80 the high, $86.70 the low, $88 even the final price today, that down $152.5. The Dow is up 81 points at 10,745. The NASDAQ down 1 at 2051. The S&P 500 4 higher at 1196.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Here's one from the younger set. Elaine Richmond, age 8, from B.C., Canada, wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, how come when I mixed a thick solution of alum and hot water and waited for days, I didn't get any seed crystals? I tried it 3 times.
You were probably using dead alum. Unlike sea monkeys, which can live for thousands of years,